Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome. This is Taste Matters on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your guest host, Isabella, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome our guest today. It's Johnny Uzzini. Mm-hmm. I knew I'd get that wrong. Welcome, Johnny, to the show. Really appreciate having you here.
Yeah, it's about time. I mean, I've been invited a million times, and now I'm finding my schedule is a little bit lighter so I can fit things like this in.
We'll get to that light schedule of yours. So let's talk about you and your sweet life, I presume. Johnny Uzzini, revered, recognized, wonderfully talented pastry chef. You've won a James Beard Award in 2006. I believe you were honored this year by the CIA, the Culinary Institute of America, with, I don't know, culinary visionaries. Countless accolades, lots of inclusions. What have you been up to and what have you been doing and why are you so special and why are you so famous? And I guess I would start by saying, you've worked for probably the best in the business, classically French trained pastry chef that you are. I'm going to drop some names. You worked for and were head of the executive pastry chef for Jean Georges for 10 years, most recently. Prior to that, Daniel Boulud, Francois Paillard, Pierre Hermé, one of my personal favorites. This is certainly a very wonderfully accomplished resume. I assume it's not an easy accomplishment. None of these people are probably easy to work for. I can't imagine pastry being kind of an easy place to make a living either. So thank you for joining the show. And let's talk about that was your career. We know you from all of these accomplishments. And then you sort of stepped down probably about a year ago, right? You're approaching that anniversary.
That's a nice way of saying it. I stepped down. I mean, more like hit a wall. Seriously, it's like, my whole life has been about getting to the point where I was a Jean Georges was, I've never had a job outside of a kitchen. I've been in the kitchen for 23 years. I mean, I'm 38 years old. So most of my life has been in a basement of a kitchen somewhere. So I kept setting goals for myself. Every couple of years, set a new goal. And then I got to a point where not where I felt like everything was done in the world and I've done everything, but I just felt like, okay, well, I've done this now. So how do I reevaluate what I've done? How do I re-inspire myself? How do I kind of like get back that fire that I love so much as in my youth as being a young cook trying to get to the next level? So I said, well, before anybody else can knock me off my ladder and before I get too comfortable and start resting on my laurels, why not knock myself off the ladder? And if I think I'm a badass, prove it and do it again. Mm-hmm. So now I'm refocusing and again, applying everything I am, all my spirit, all my passion, all my energy now to new projects, still in the food world. I mean, I'm always going to be a chef. I'm always going to be a pastry chef. But I want to do something different now. I don't want to just be making desserts in a restaurant. I want to make chocolate. I want to get involved in the world of coffee. I want to start distilling. There's so many different things I want to do. I want to apply everything I am as a chef and my understanding of balancing flavors to new mediums.
Okay.
And that's what I'm excited about right now.
Before we explore that, I just wanted to remind listeners that are listening live for the next 30 minutes. This is Radio Heritage Network. This is Taste Matters. I'm your guest host. If you have questions, comments, want to reach Johnny right now, you can certainly call in at 718-497-2128. But you can also tweet your question to heritage_radio. I imagine also, 10 years and spending a decade in a very particular special place got you to get a cookbook out, right? Foreplay was your pastry book, got you on TV. You were with Top Chef Just Desserts for 2 seasons as a judge. Mm-hmm. And I imagine, you kind of at this point in your life do have to wonder, what's next for me? How can I do it differently? I'm sure that schedule was kind of grueling and you're just ready for whatever that means. So you've stepped away. What have you been up to for a year? Where do you go? Do you have a home? Do you have How do you get around? What's your typical day like? Is there such a thing right now?
I mean, I'm still a maniac. You know, I still take on a lot of work. I'm traveling a lot. I'm doing a lot of food festivals. I have another book on the way, working on more TV shows, stuff like that, working on the business plan, and working on building up this mini empire that I'm doing, but also at the same time doing a lot of charity work. You know, it's like finally having time to really get involved with charities. Like one of the ones that's really important to me right now is Cookies for Kids Cancer, really supporting pediatric cancer. Mm-hmm. So we're doing a big campaign this fall with that. And, you know, as much as that, and just trying to like travel and trying to get back my life a little bit. This summer, I spent 5 weeks on a motorcycle. I shipped my motorcycle to San Francisco and spent 5 weeks like kind of ping-ponging back across the country. 35 days, 7,400 miles. Wow. By myself on a motorcycle, just documenting everything I ate, everywhere I went, and just kind of taking some time to kind of go back and say, okay, well, I've worked so hard I've done so much in my life. Let's think about it. Let's go back to it. Let's think about the things that you've accomplished, the things you've achieved, the things that you want to do again, the things, you know, and just kind of, it was just kind of like looking inside of myself for a little while and being in my own helmet, you know, and no one else to talk to really kind of gives you that insight into who you are and what you've become and are you happy with that? Are you not happy with that? What changes do you want to make going forward? So that was really important for me to do that.
So what kind of a motorcycle? Not that I know anything about them, but they're...
I mean, I'm known for having... I have three. I'm a maniac. So I have... My babies are my two Ducatis. I have a touring bike and a street bike for the city and stuff. But now I this year, another one of my goals was to learn how to race motorcycles. So I started taking racing lessons now. And I have a racing motorcycle as well. But yeah,
where do you keep them?
They're all over the place. Okay. So you don't even. I have one in the city. I have also. I'm from the Catskills, so I'm very much half redneck, half city boy. You know, so you know, I have a little cabin up in the mountains, and I keep one motorcycle up there. And you know, when I'm not in the city, like these past two weekends, I finally had some time off, so I was upstate chopping wood for the winter. You know, like I'm very much, I love that kind of stuff as well. You know,
okay,
play in the mud.
So, what's the book you're working on? A new book, I hear. Right, is that one of the projects? Uh-huh. Can you tell us anything about it at this point?
Yeah, we're almost done. We're almost done with the manuscript. I have it handed in at the end of December, and it should have been what the first book was. You know, everybody says, you know, you make your first book for your ego; the rest you make to actually sell to people that will use them. So it's a lesson learned. And I mean, Dessert Foreplay did well, you know, considering how technical it was. And you know, I wanted to make a book that really reflected that time for me in the restaurants and what I've achieved, and kind of give homage to and props to all the chefs that had given me an opportunity along the way. So that's what that book was. And then this book is actually just a building block book. It's foundations, it's principles, it's kind of giving people the tools, not only home cooks but even cooks who don't have a lot of pastry experience, say okay, they could buy this book and essentially develop a menu for their restaurant or just do a great, you know, dessert for their family. Either way, it gives you all the tools you need to build up.
And how hard is it for you to write a book? I mean, your experience is not as an author or a cookbook writer per se, but you know, how has the experience been for you?
I mean, I'm not.
Do you like sit down with a computer?
I know my limitations. What I'm good at is I'm good at being creative. I'm good at coming up with things. I actually paid someone to be my co-writer, and his name is on the book, and everything gives credit. And he sits there, and so we'll write recipes, and he stands next to me the whole time and watches everything I do. Every little nuance, he's like, well, why'd you do that? I was like, what do you mean? So all the things that I would take for granted, he catches and puts it in the books, and that's super important. So I'm not allowed to work in my own kitchen. I have to go to his house in New Jersey where he has like a, you know, basic home kitchen that you'll find in the Midwest. No like special tools, anything, and I'm only allowed to use what we call her Marge from the Midwest. You know, so I'm only allowed to use what Marge has to work with. That way there's no tricks. There's no like, anything I do can be done anywhere in the country, in any kitchen in the country, you know, with the most basic of tools. And it's great because, you know, like I said, as a professional, you take so much for granted. So I think a lot of times when a chef writes his own book, they miss a lot of the steps because they just take for granted that people just know this already.
Sure.
But they don't. They don't, you know. Like, why are you doing that? What are you looking for? What's the theme? What's the bubble? So all the things that experience teaches you, you have to kind of translate that, get that in the book. So that's part of the process of educating people about cooking.
Now, would you say pastry in particular is a little bit more fastidious or requires a little bit more information, skills than maybe savory cooking? Is that true? And
well, the two things it requires more of is attention to detail and precision, you know, and I'm a firm believer, like I hate the cup measurement system. Like I think it's stupid. I think it's retarded. I think, you know, it's part of the problem why people are afraid to bake. Because there's no standardization. I mean, you know, if there's four people in this room right now, if each of us made a cup of flour and then we weighed it, it'd be four different weights. You know, so imagine when you're working with ingredients that are so specific, like you know, a baking powder or something that makes a big difference in a small quantity, you're going to have four very different final products, you know, where cooking, it's a little more lenient, you know. Mm-hmm. You could taste as you go, and, you know, you have four cooks to make four soups, fine, you'll get four good soups, but they'll be very different. Whereas pastry, a little bit of that variance can make a huge difference in your final output. And, you know, if you spend all this time making a cake and then waiting for it to bake and cool and everything else, and then you find out it didn't work, mm-hmm. you're disappointed in that. Yeah, that's a lot of time wasted, a lot of product waste, whatever else. And it's like, chances are you're not going to try it again. So, you know, for me, I'm very much about teaching about using weight only, you know, using a scale. Digital scales are super mm-hmm. cheap now. Being very precise, being very accurate, you know, using quality ingredients. And that's the key. If you understand those principles, you're going to be much more successful right off the bat.
Okay. Tell me about, you mentioned coffee, either distillery or coffee roastery or chocolate. Somewhere,
all the above.
All of the above.
Under one roof. So the goal is, I've always loved chocolate. You know, it's mm-hmm. one of the things I've always been really good at in the kitchen. And, you know, we had an extensive chocolate program at Jean George. I didn't make the chocolate from scratch, but we had built a chocolate room, and we were doing about 15,000 pieces every 3 weeks just to use in-house. Mm-hmm. So it kind of gave me the bug, and I've been learning more and more about it. So I've always wanted to make my own chocolate. So the idea is to you know, source my own beans, you know, go on these kind of, like, I love the excursions, you know, mm-hmm. I love all the Ewan McGregor movies. So my idea is to get on a motorcycle, go to South America and find awesome cocoa beans, you know, like, and just do these trips. Mm-hmm. I mean, and, you know, and possibly develop a show around that, you know, later on, and more books. But the idea is make my own chocolate from scratch. And then, so I said, well, okay, well, if I'm going to be roasting chocolate beans, well, why not roast coffee beans at the same time? Similar equipment, similar ideals, similar conditions. So I said, well, and I love coffee so much. So I said, okay, well, if I'm going to be roasting chocolate, let's roast coffee. So now we have it. We're going to make our own chocolate. We're going to roast our own coffee beans. Essentially combine the concept of what, like, think of like a Mass Brothers mm-hmm. meets like a Blue Bottle meets like a New York distillery company. Okay. You know, so like three things that are in the neighborhood that I love, you know, and that mm-hmm. I support in every way. But I want to do it my way, you know, for my aesthetic, my ideas, my flavor profile. So it'll be very different from what those mm-hmm. companies are doing. But I think it makes sense. And as far as the distilleries, like, I've always been very into cocktails and making spirits and stuff like that. So I want to make my own whiskeys, ryes, and rums, but infuse and impart the flavors of this raw chocolate and coffee. You know, so not so much to make a chocolate bourbon, but maybe a bourbon with an essence of like this deep cocoa in it mm-hmm. somewhere in the back notes. You know, so really interesting and new different. You know, and I have all different ideas of way to make chocolate and to incorporate all these different flavors of coffee and. So it goes on and on. I mean, that's where the creativity comes back sure. to me, you know. I'm reinvigorated. I'm re-excited about, you know, doing something new. And this is my way to kind of come back into it.
So it also sounds like it's a multi-step, multi-year, futuristic kind of plan, right? Can you open all three at once?
It no, seems my, ma- like my management really. Thinks I'm insane, and just about everybody I talk to thinks I'm insane. But that's me. I'm go big or go home kind of guy, you know. Like I push hard, I make stuff happen, and that's just the way I am. And if I don't set big goals like this, I'll lose focus, and I'll end up just giving up, mm-hmm. you know. So I need to set myself lofty ambitions, and that's what drives me, because I get angry at myself. And like I've always said, my biggest fear in life is the fear of being mediocre and not doing something well, or not mm-hmm. doing. And if anything I do, if I can't do it great, I quit. So this will push me hard to kind of like, okay, if you think you're a badass, do it again.
Right. Do you really think you can do kind of all three? I know they're in some ways they're very craft oriented. Mm-hmm. You know, the art of roasting, you focus on the coffee bean, you focus on the cocoa bean. Mm-hmm. Do you think you can do all three well? You know, you're talking about kind of. Mm-hmm.
I do.
Okay.
I do because, you know, the more I learn about it, the more I immerse myself. I've been spending time in each of these kind of facilities working with professionals that have been doing this their whole lives. You know, like, just like I'm a pastry chef my whole career, like, I've been talking to these guys that work only with coffee mm-hmm. or work only with chocolate, and they're like, you know, it makes sense. You know, it just makes sense. So, you know, whether it's not all going to open one after the other, but I have to think about it as I'm developing. Okay, I need a space conducive to all three. You know, I need to think about variances, zoning, this and that. So there's a lot that goes into it, and it's probably making things super hard on myself, but that's just the way I like things.
Okay, super hard. Why not, right? We're going to take a short little break, and we'll be back to talk more with John Uzzini.
You're listening to Leaving by Dead Stars on the heritageradionetwork.org. Have we lost all control?
Man, Joe, your computer is so slow, I can't even use this thing.
Yeah, I should probably get a new one. Do you have any suggestions?
Oh, totally, man. You should go to TechServe.
Okay, what's so good about TechServe?
Well, they've got this awesome new insider program that's free when you get a new Mac with AppleCare. So you should buy your computer there because you get 50% off data transfer, free loaner computers, front-of-the-line repair privileges, an annual Mac tune-up service, backup consultation and setup, seminars, and much more.
Okay, yeah, where's TechServe?
It's at 119 West 23rd Street in New York City. They're New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, and you should totally check out TechServe.com for more information.
All right, that settles it. I'm headed to TechServe.
What's the number here?
And we're back. This is Taste Matters, and I'm your guest host, Isabella Wojcik, and my guest today is Johnny Uzzini. And I'm excited to talk to Johnny. I haven't seen him in a while. I found an article in New York Magazine that was probably about 10 years ago. You were just starting at John George, and it kind of talked about the hijinks in Danielle's Kitchen. You know, and you're credited with a lot of them, and Cornelius Gallagher or Neil Gallagher and Bradford Thompson, these are great chefs that are still working today. And it kind of got me on this little journey of thinking about reuniting all of you, and that spawned a tribute dinner to Danielle, which was kind of a beautiful, beautiful experience. So it was fun for me to research a little bit about Johnny and kind of reminisce in my mind about just wonderful meals, great experiences, and tributes. So Johnny, let's talk about, I guess, how do you feel about pastry? How did you fall into sort of the sweet side of things? Were you drawn to it? I mean, how were you drawn to it? What was it in it for you?
It's funny because I didn't start in pastry because I wanted to be a pastry chef. I started as a pot washer because I wanted to make money to go out with girls, and my dad wouldn't give me an allowance, and I grew up in the Catskills, and the only thing around us was country clubs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm born later in the year, so all my friends got the jobs, you know, the better jobs, which was being caddies, you mm-hmm. know, and they got to work until dark and make cash tips and everything else, and I come home every night smelling like swamp, ruining all my clothes, you know, but like I said, like, it's one of those things that, you know, I played almost every sport in high school for 1 year. Mm-hmm. Because if I couldn't be good at it, I quit and tried something else. Cooking was the only thing that I felt like I was getting better at, and I could see improvement, and it was something that I can control on my own. And so that's why I stuck with it. So I went from a pot washer to a dishwasher, and then from a dishwasher to peeling carrots, and kind of worked my way up. And by the time I was in 11th grade, I enrolled in like a BOCES VOTEC program for mm-hmm. cooking, and I started competing. And I took second place in New York City at 16, and then it just went from there, you know. And by the time I graduated high school, I got a job at the River Cafe at 17 years old here in the city. I moved to the city, and I'd already been accepted to CA, but I had like four mm-hmm. or 5 months to kill between my start date.
Who was the chef then? Do you remember?
John Lagren.
Okay.
It was right after Burke left.
Mm-hmm. And David Burke.
Yeah. So, but that's when I kind of hit the wall. My mother was a wildlife rehabilitator, a wildlife veterinarian. So I grew up on a lot of land with every kind of animal you could think of, you know, anything that got hit by a car, shot, caught in a trap, you know, parents kill, whatever, would come to my mother. So we had a possum, deer, like fox, anything you could think mm-hmm. of. We had raccoons, you know, and we would nurse them like with syringes before their eyes were even open, you know, help them go to the bathroom, and then raise them until they're big enough to kind of fend on their own, and then re-release them into the wilderness. And anything that couldn't be re-released, like if a wing was broken or something, mm-hmm. my mother would keep it for the duration of its life. So I grew up an animal lover, on top of the fact that she like bred dogs and everything else. It was like a farm. It was a farm in our house. Seriously. So then growing up upstate, it was fine because everything came in fabricated, you know, like all the meat came in packages from Cisco or whatever else. It wasn't until I moved to the city when like whole animals started coming in. It was part of my job on my station in Garmager at 17 to kill lobsters. And I had tears in my eyes. You know, I was like, it was horrible for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and to see like the guy next to me, like hacking the head off a goat or something, you know, and like, I was like, oh my God. But meanwhile, the pastry chef was out in the barn making chocolate butterflies and bridges and all these fantastical creations. And I was like, well, I want to learn this. He's like, oh, you're American or you're a cook. You don't care, blah, blah. And he would yell at me in French every day. So I would go and work my whole morning shift, and I'd work for free every night for him until one day he said, okay, you come work for me. And you know, because he saw I was really interested in it. So I called the school. I was able to switch from culinary to pastry, mm-hmm. and I never looked back. I mean, I love to cook still, but professionally, I'm a much stronger pastry chef than I am a chef.
So what is it about it? Is there any essence that you can define that draws you in?
I think you could be much more creative in the pastry kitchen than you can in the savory kitchen. You mm-hmm. go to a restaurant, and people have certain expectations. You know, they want to be satiated. They're going to spend their money on their appetizer and entree, but they want to make sure that they're getting their dollar value, and they're not really going to take a whole lot of chances. When you get to desserts, no one eats dessert because they're hungry. You know, you eat dessert because it's a treasure. It's a jewel box. It's a bonus at the end of the meal. It's something to please you, you know? Mm-hmm. So people are more often likely to take chances at the end of the meal. And so this is where you could be really creative. You can mess with textures, flavors, flavor combinations that people haven't heard of, and they'll try it, you know. So that's what's exciting to me. And for me, also the precision. You know, I love being very accurate. I'm very meticulous. I'm very organized. And that really fits the lifestyle of being a pastry chef.
Were you always that way? Is that something growing up, or is that something you developed through your experiences?
No, I've always been kind of a neat freak, very organized in certain ways. I mean, it's weird because certain things I'll be super organized in and other things I'm not. So it doesn't always apply. Like, you know, I don't like organize my fridge in my apartment and label everything, you know, like, like I know some people that do that, and it's
really
funny.
That's not a badass. That's just an obsessive compulsive.
Yeah. So I'm not obsessive compulsive is, I guess, what I'm trying to say, but I'm very, I don't know, like, mm-hmm. it's something that I could wrap my head around, and I'm good at it.
Okay. What, was your mom or your dad, either one of them, did they do desserts? Did they make something like that at home? I mean, was that part of your growing up experience at all?
You know, my grandparents cooked, and I grew up with my grandmother cooking a bit, but both my parents worked. My dad worked two jobs, whatever. My mom, like I said, she was a veterinarian and a couple other jobs, so we were kind of latchkey kids. We kind of fend for ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't tell you how many Swanson TV dinners I've eaten growing up and stuff. Yeah, I mean, and you kind of fend for yourself. And that's probably what drove me to become a cook, was just fending for myself and saying, okay, well, I got to figure this out, you know. And but my mom only had like a couple hits, you know. Like, she had like Black Forest cake that she would make for my dad like once a
wow.
year and a couple other things. But it was like, you know, nothing much. My mom would burn potatoes to make mashed potatoes, and, mm-hmm. and she would never taste her food. So she would go, we'd go have dinner, and we'd go to eat them, and they would taste like smoke, you know, because she would use like the steamer, and then the steamer would run out of water, and it would just destroy the potatoes. And she wouldn't even taste the food. So we'd get there, and we'd go to take a big mouthful of potatoes, and they were smoky, and my dad would yell at my mom would cry. It was like, oh my God. It was a disaster. It was a disaster. So she,
aww,
but
the
she
family
was,
table.
She tried, you know, she was raising a bunch of animals.
I think
so.
She was a pioneer, because smoke is an ingredient now that we see a lot of, you know, smoked chocolate and smoked vegetables
exactly.
and all that. So she was ahead of her time.
Yeah, usually it's hickory smoke, not aluminum smoke, you know? A little different flavor profile.
I don't know, with modernist cuisine, you know, it's all fair game.
Yeah, I'll talk to Carlo. He's probably doing that back in the at Blanco there.
So how do you feel about, I don't know, should we talk about trends in pastry? How do you feel about sugar? What do you think, is your style changing in any way? I mean, I know you're thinking about these kinds of different projects. We're talking about roasting, distilling, mm-hmm. Which is not exactly the same as, you know, making these precision desserts. But what do you think about dessert these days? Do you go out, and when you do you always order dessert? Are you excited about what's going on out there? How are you feeling about all that?
Yeah, I love desserts. I love well-made, well-balanced desserts. I think what people need to realize, and pastry chefs need to realize, is sugar's not a flavor. You know, sweet's not a flavor. Mm-hmm. You know, so if the first thing I taste is sweet, then I think it's a failure. Mm-hmm. You know, so what excites me now about, you know, I don't really follow trends, but I think people are being smarter. You know, the dessert portions are getting smaller, flavors are getting bigger. You know, and people are understanding textures more, and I think that's important. Like, I don't want a big monster piece of cake with mm-hmm. just the same texture all the way through. I want something that's thought out. I want flavors that make sense together. I want textures that you know, work well together and excite my palate as I'm eating it. That's what excites me, you know. And I, you know, but I mean, there's something for everybody. Some people love hyper sweet cookies and cakes, and there's a very successful chain right now in New York that they're doing well with very sweet cookies and stuff, and good for them.
Right.
But it's not what I enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Is there something that, I mean, do you have a favorite thing? Do you have a favorite kind of dessert component? Or conversely, is there something that you hate and you wish was never invented, like the blah, blah, blah?
I mean, people get caught up in these crazes, you know, like the cupcake craze and stuff like that. And I think there's nothing wrong with a cupcake if it's well made with good ingredients and a delicious frosting. But I mean, just to make them and like with these crappy cake mixes and like these hyper like shortening buttercreams and stuff like that, it's disgusting. And then people say, oh well, and I tell someone I'm a pastry chef, oh, can you make good cupcakes, you know? And then people just automatically assume that's what I do, or mm-hmm. that's like the elite of being a pastry chef. It's like, and it makes me angry, and I almost want to kill those people. Smash a cupcake in their face,
you know. But that's just part of, you know, a trend, then everyone latches on.
Trends suck.
And then everyone's doing it, and then we're over it.
I hate,
you know,
trends.
So I think the first time the cupcake came around again, we're excited. It was retro, and then it became, you know, tired.
For the record, I wasn't excited.
Okay. How do you feel about Napoleons?
I like Napoleons. I like them. Well, like Milfoyle Napoleon, you're talking about? Like the
yes.
classic? Yeah, those are good if they're made right. If the puff pastry is delicious and the cream is light, you know. But I think right now my favorite bakery probably in New York is Dominique Ancel. Okay. He's a badass, and he worked at Danielle as well, and he worked for Fauchon for many years in opening Fauchons around the world. Mm-hmm. And what the product that he's doing in Soho is really outstanding.
Okay. Hold on to that thought. We have a caller. Caller, go right ahead. You're talking to Johnny Uzzini.
Hi, Johnny. I have a question for you about freezing cookie dough.
Sure.
What works and what doesn't work? I've already prepared a sugar cookie dough in the freezer because Christmas week gets crazy trying to make all the cookies to give to friends and family. It's possible to freeze and what's not?
Oh, you can freeze everything.
Like,
I don't think there's a cookie dough you can't freeze, unless it's some strange, like, whipped froth, egg white kind of thing. But any like butter-based or, basic standard, flour, egg, sugar, butter, kind of salt kind of thing, easily frozen. And then I prefer to make all my doughs and kind of mold them and freeze them immediately. And then I just use them as I need them kind of thing. So I'll always...
Exactly, that's what I'm hoping to do.
Yeah, so like what I do for sugar cookie dough like that, I'll roll the dough into a tube with parchment paper, roll it up like a cylinder. Mm-hmm. And then when I need, I just take it out of the freezer and slice slices and just make as many slices as I need and then put it back in the freezer.
Okay, so I could even do shortcake cookie.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, great, thank you.
You're very welcome. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for calling. Merry Christmas to you. So we were talking about Dominique Ancel, and of course it's two things I want to say. It is the holiday season, and also today is December 5th, and I don't know if you know this, but this in 1933, there was an amendment passed to end prohibition. So go have a drink today and just thank Utah for signing on on December 5th. So we have just a couple of minutes left, and we're talking to you. What are you going to do today after you leave here?
Well, one of my goals, I'm not that I'm materialistic, but some of the like benchmarks of my things are like things that I work hard for, and one of them is like the only thing I've ever had new in my life was my Ducati, it was like, and that was a big thing for me. It's like, I always said one day I'm going to do this. So the day I got those keys, I was like, I felt good. Like, wow, I worked hard for this and I knew how hard I worked for it. Like, I paid for my own college, I've been on my own for a while. And so recently it's been a goal for me to kind of work towards another vehicle that I've always had a crush on. I couldn't afford, and it's a Land Rover Defender. It's like this mean, like 4x4 looking, like it's evil. It's evil. They only brought in the country 3 years, and in the last year in 1997, they only brought in 300 of them, and so they're super hard to find and everything else. So I finally got my hands on one, and it got delivered last week.
And, wow. And so Mazel tov.
Yeah, but it's a 1997. So people are like, really? You bought a 1997? It's like, yes. Yes, I did.
So where are we going after this,
Johnny?
So
there's a place in Westchester that does like customization and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So they're going to help me kind of get it to where I want it, and kind of, I have to roll down, hand crank the windows down. And yeah, it's like, so I'm going to put a little bit of modern trickery in there. So.
And let's talk super quick. You mentioned charities. What are your thoughts on, I feel like charities these days are relying on chefs and pastry chefs, kind of that star quality. Do you feel good about that? Are you?
I think that's important. I think it's our role as a chef to really get involved. And if we have an outreach that we could reach people that maybe aren't reached through some of the other outlets of the charities, I think it's important. I think it's our duty. I can involve a lot of charities. And like I said, cookies right now, if you go to www.cookiesforkidscancer.org. We're doing a great program where if anybody, because it's a season for bake sales right now and baking, and so if anybody does a bake sale or any kind of cookie exchange, if you register it, for every cookie sold or exchanged, GLAAD is donating $1 towards pediatric cancer. Every
that's
cookie.
Huge, yeah.
And it, plus they're doing it on Facebook where you can do a virtual cookie. So you can just send a cookie via email and GLAAD will give $1 to cancer.
Okay.
So it's huge. We're raising a lot of money for pediatric cancer. People don't realize that pediatric cancer is the number one cause of death of children under 18. Yet most of the technology right now is over 20 years old. So they need.
I know we're out of time, but sort of, is this a personal cause for you?
I lost my mom to cancer and at a young age, and then a lot of my family, like my aunts, uncles, grandparents, all died of cancer. So I push hard for cancer. And with breast cancer, kids cancer, stuff like that. So it's important.
And we can follow you on Johnny_Uzzini. That's your Twitter handle where you'll probably talk about
A lot of stuff.
Cookies. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate having you on Taste Matters. And for listeners, next week, our guest, Mitchell Davis, the host, will be back. And his guest will be David Weber, who's president of New York Food Truck Association, talking about Hurricane Sandy relief efforts. Thank you, Johnny. Happy holidays to you.
Too.
Happy end of prohibition. And we'll check you out on the archives on heritageradionetwork.org. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.